This is Ecotopia on KZFR, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological.
Tonight we'll be speaking with Lauren Kohler, City Council candidate for District 5. We'll ask her about climate resilience, homelessness, urban sprawl, public safety, and more.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR listeners and by the COVID-conscious Chico Certified Farmers Markets, with year-round markets Wednesdays at the North Valley Plaza, Saturdays in Chico at 4th and Wall. The Chico Certified Farmers Markets, bringing food lovers and farmers together since 1980.
The opinions expressed on Ecotopia do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. We'll take a short break and be back to talk with Lauren Kohler.
Squares my room, and it's perfect.
is Ecotopia on KZFR, exploring ecosystems, social, environmental, and technological. I'm Susan Trudy. Tonight, our ecosystem is the complex one of Chico, and our guest on the phone is Lauren Kohler, candidate for the City Council in District 5.
Lauren is a Chico native, went to Butte College, then went to Chico State to get her bachelor's degree in psychology. She worked in local businesses along the way, but she's also worked as a behavior health education specialist. She's been the business manager at Chico Chai. She's currently working as a case manager, helping people transition out of homelessness. Welcome, Lauren Kohler.
Thank you so much for having me tonight.
The Enterprise Record recently ran an editorial questioning why anybody would want to run for city council in the current fairly uncivil climate. Why did you decide to run?
I'm running because we need to see change in our city, and electing the same leadership that has failed to bring that about isn't going to do the job. We're facing so many compounding crises, and we need to stop doing the same things that we've always done and expecting different results. I realized after, you know, advocating for the policy changes that I saw that we needed as a city, that I could do more and needed to do more. But it is a pretty intensely uncivil climate currently.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, most of the criticism that I get is about my age, often my appearance, and it's really about the specific solutions set forward. So I want to have conversations about solutions and policies and priorities instead of about, you know, kind of tertiary things.
I agree. I'm not supposed to do that, but I agree.
And there's been a lot of rancor. I assume that part of what you're talking about is much more civil conversation within City Council and maybe among those who present and advocate to City Council.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, I don't think that we all need to agree on everything, but I think that talking about the things that we're disagreeing about rather than, you know, each other or using hateful and sometimes dangerous language to describe the problems that we're facing has been an issue that I see a lot. So I really, you know, again, I just want things to be solution oriented because that's how we're going to get things done.
You've identified several major areas you'd like to talk about tonight. These include housing, infill development, urban sprawl, public safety, homelessness, climate change. We're going to get to all those, but I think we're going to take them in reverse order. So we're primarily an environmental show. So let's start with climate change. What do you see as our most pressing priorities?
So I think that we as a city have to start looking at all of the decisions that we make as a city in relation to climate. No decision that we make happens in a vacuum. You know, each decision about licensing for businesses and public safety and development actually affects our climate. We can't just create a commission and act like the work is done. So we need to make sure that all of those decisions are looked at through the lens of climate action. We need to make sure that we're protecting our natural space, not only as a fire precaution, but to make sure that we're not just constantly developing out and out. We need to make sure that our new development is climate conscious in location and in landscaping and actual building. We need to ensure access to fresh local food and maintain our natural spaces with fuel load management practices that are truly sustainable. And all of these things work together to, you know, create a livable, habitable future, not just for right now, but for future generations.
Do you agree with the principles in Chico's Climate Emergency Declaration and with the Chico version of the Green New Deal, which some are calling the Brown New Deal after Alex? Where do you stand on those things?
Yeah, I do agree with those principles. I think that it's important to frame the conversation with the idea that we each have to do our part, from the local level all the way to the global level. This is an emergency, and calling it that isn't, you know, fear-mongering. It's just calling it what it is, and I think that that's important. I do support the vision of 100% reduction of citywide greenhouse gas emissions and to become fossil-free no later than 2030, as well as ensuring good jobs as we make that transition, cooling centers and hydration stations for both for our unhoused population and for especially seniors who might have, you know, poorly insulated homes or no air conditioning, and creating more affordable and social housing are all things that I absolutely support. So we can't just declare an emergency, though, and then push it to the side and forget about it.
Right.
We've only got 10 years before 2030, so we need to start implementing these things right now. We did declare the climate emergency in April of 2019, and we have our Climate Action Commission working on the Climate Action Plan 2.0, and I think that it really works to take the urgency of our current situation into account. So I think it's important that we are listening to experts and creating a roadmap for the city to, have a greener future.
Right. Are there aspects of the Green New Deal that you see as possible to implement immediately? Do you see priorities that you would like to focus on when you look at the Green New Deal what's been proposed in Chico here?
Yeah, I like to approach every problem and look at it with kind of what can we do about it right now, like today and tomorrow, and what can we do in the long term to make sure that we're solving the root of the problem. And I think a lot of different issues can be kind of tackled that way. So to answer your question, I think starting, you know, we have to start small, and small immediate action is good. So improving access to fresh local food is important, and we can do that by continuing to support our farmers markets and continuing to expand community gardens in public spaces. And I would also really love to see, you know, there have been some folks but some folks have had front yard garden stands.
Right.
That nearly got shut down by code enforcement because they are against code, but I would love to see, you know, a really affordable permitting system for that, so that people can feel good about having a front yard garden stand. So, you know, if you're in an apartment complex and you have no yard, but your neighbor next door has a house and a big yard and they have a garden back there, then you can share in that community. I also think that, you know, one thing that we can do is ensure that all of our development is in line with our general plan and the Green New Deal and our climate action plan. There's different things that we can do. You know, some people are like, oh, we need to have like double paned windows in every development. We could also just put windows on different sides of the house so that we're making development more sustainable.
Right.
So looking at different, I kind of think of it as like, you know, there's these like big exciting solutions, but then there's also solutions that are, you know, inexpensive and easily implemented, like, you know, moving the windows.
Right. The general plan really is out of date now, because so many, primarily because of the fires and how many people are unhoused, and the needs of the community has changed. And I'm wondering if you've thought about And I know the housing element is up for the general plan for renewal or for revision. And I'm not sure that we can follow the general plan in thinking about our revision because the needs of the community have changed so much. Have you thought about that?
I think that it is really important to not kind of look at one document that we've made and just say, okay, no, this is how we're going to do it. And while I did say, you know, we need to follow it, you know, thinking about the aspect of focusing on more infill development and mm-hmm. not extending out. But mm-hmm. I think that you're right. And our general plan did not factor in an almost 20% increase in our population.
Right.
So I think that every decision that we make on a city level needs to take into account the community. And, you know, I imagine that goes without saying, but looking out and rather than just thinking, oh, we made this plan.
Yeah.
We need to follow it to the letter, regardless of if it doesn't work.
Right.
That's not going to work for us. And I have a background in community psychology. And one of the main things that I love about community psychology is that you go out into the community and you ask them, hey, what's the problem and what do you need? And then you take that and use it to inform research and policy. So rather than, you know, sitting from wherever you're sitting and seeing a problem and then deciding what the solution is, really making an intentional effort to meet the needs of the community is going to be vital as we adjust, because we are still adjusting.
Right, absolutely.
To the effects of the fire.
More and more as these fires burn.
Lauren Kohler, you also talk on your website about public transportation as part of your workforce sustainability. Devilishly difficult given urban sprawl. And, I mean, we see beeline buses kind of waddling through town, empty much of the time. They don't get into the neighborhoods. It's really tough to take the bus from here to there. What are some of your thoughts about a robust urban transit system that would be integrated with your view of the community?
I think that we need to look at, this is something where going out into the community and asking people where they need to see bus stops is going to be super important. I don't know the needs of every person, but we need to find out exactly what the need is. And then, you know, while public transportation is a county system, that's not something I want to just, you know, push off and say, oh, it's the county, we can't do anything about
mm-hmm.
it. And work to meaningfully communicate and collaborate about our public transportation system. Because you're right, like often the buses are fairly empty. So it's clear when people aren't utilizing a service, it might not mean that that service isn't needed, but it generally means that it's not meeting the needs of the people who might use it.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at different ways where we can find out from folks who live in Chico, you know, where just finding out what stops are needed, what timing is needed, and asking those questions is going to be the first place to start.
Mm-hmm.
I think the city is, I'm not positive about this, is moving towards smaller and electric buses, that they're changing their fleet. Do you know anything about that? And what kind of fleet you think you would advocate?
Well, I think that I have to admit, I don't know about whether the transition to electric vehicles is going to happen. But if we, you know, if you can create more stops and a more reliable system, that's always going to help. So if we are increasing our public transportation's capacity, that would be great. I don't think that, you know, that's going to be the only solution. I think it could absolutely contribute.
And there are a lot of interesting ideas out there at the moment. One that has intrigued me is the idea of getting rid of bus schedules and replace it with something like an Uber system that the city or the county runs. So like a dial-a-ride that gets you where you go, picks you up where you need to be picked up, takes you where you need to go, rather than relying on the bus stop systems. And I know a lot of people are thinking some of those seem like they might well be successful here in Chico.
Yeah, I like that idea. I think that, you know, and it might not follow the exact same system as, like, an Uber-type system, but if there's, you know, different kind of hubs you can go to create rides or to get rides, and, you know, working from a needs-based system rather than deciding, like, well, nope, you're going to get picked up at this time at this one place. I think that would take a lot of coordination to transition to and create. But I think that looking at all kinds of different solutions is where we have to start, because, you know, we have to make some adjustments. So.
Right. Chico has escaped the recent fire disasters, at least so far. People keep telling me we still have quite a bit of fire season to go. But cities like Santa Rosa have had huge burn problems, and obviously we know what our history is with Paradise. Are there steps that we in Chico can take to reduce fire risk in Chico?
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of different things that we can do. We do need to protect our green line and that defensible space right outside the city. If we're, again, constantly building out, one, that's so much more space for our public safety service providers to cover. And then we're also moving out into, you know, you can tell when you leave Chico because it's all brown. So if we're like building out into that, that creates more risk. But, you know, within Chico, we have a lot of natural space, and fuel load management is going to be very important in, you know, taking care of our land in a sustainable way. Because fires are happening every year, and we need to start being prepared for them. And one of the things that I think we need to do is look to the Mutupta people who have tended this land for thousands of years in a really sustainable manner, and looking towards their traditional ecological knowledge and following the steps that they set out is going to be another way that we can reduce our risk and protect our city.
I've heard Jim Brobeck, who's a water analyst in the area, I've heard him talk about the gold line on the east and south of the city, that we have a green line on the west, but we need a gold line that we don't go beyond to protect those lands and use them as buffers and have the water areas that are in those, they're not called swamps. What are they called? Wetlands. The wetlands that we have on the east side, to make sure that those are protected. And so I know that part of what you're looking at is avoiding urban sprawl. Can we do that? Can we provide enough housing with infill?
You know, I think that we can. I think that we haven't seen it super effectively in Chico, because it's not something that we necessarily were thinking of through development for the past several years. But there's so many different types of housing. I think that we kind of think, okay, you can have a small house, a big house, or you can like live in an apartment building. But I think that we can do so much more. So, you know, I'd love to look into the and prioritize looking into the different types of housing, like social housing or community land trusts, where we're using single room occupancies or, you know, cottage villages or sometimes called eco villages, which are like small detached homes with common facilities. Co-housing, which is, you know, can be used in a lot of different kinds of housing where different unrelated individuals all live together, or tiny homes, or a lot of different kinds of housing that we can look towards. But then also just, you know, your traditional smaller apartments. I know so many people who are looking for 1 and 2 bedroom apartments. So I think that we do have a lot of space that we're not, you know, utilizing to its full potential.
One of the issues I think the council will have to deal with, too, is the fact that suburban sprawl is much more profitable for developers. Get a big, fat, flat piece of brown land, put in the pipes, start building massive houses, whereas infill often requires smaller structures, even the smaller kinds of apartment buildings that you're talking about. Do you think the city council can wield its power to be persuasive with developers along those lines?
Yeah, I think that is absolutely a possibility. And looking at the costs in the long run of the roads and sewers and storm drain systems that we need to put in when we sprawl outwards, versus, you know, the money saved by developing in spaces where all of that already exists, I think we need to look at the different, you know, permitting costs and fees and weigh all of that in the balance to make sure that we're making it feasible for people to want to build infill development.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
But, you know, also realizing that it's going to be a necessity, and so we have to get creative with it so that we're protecting our natural space and protecting our future.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR, and we're speaking with Lauren Kohler. She is a candidate for the Chico City Council for District 5. We're going to take a short break and be back to talk to her about some of her other priorities, including homelessness and public safety.
You say you believe in science, then climate change is real. But oh no, we can't afford a Green New Deal. Reports are dire, the scientists are clear. You say it's unrealistic to change things in 10 years. But you'll already be dead on Judgment Day. Come and gone now, get out of the way. If you're not gonna fight for a future for my kids, then I'm not sure what the point of you is. Aliens are invading, we're fighting for our lives. We have 12 years to somehow turn the tide. You can say we can't afford it, you want incrementalism, and tell me you can't hear how stupid that sounds, cause you'll already be dead on Judgment Day. On your watch, you gave big money all the keys to all the locks. So the time has come to try something else. We'd love to have you with us, but if you don't want to help, then you'll already be dead on Judgment Day. Time is coming, gone now, get out of our way. kids, then I'm not sure what the point of view is. Yeah, I'm not quite sure what the point of view is.
Welcome back to Ecotopia, where our guest is Lauren Kohler. She's a candidate for the Chico District 5 City Council seat. We've also invited the other candidates for the District 5 seat to come on the program in the near future. We haven't gotten responses, so we don't know.
Let's talk a little bit, Lauren, about your interest in homelessness. You've mentioned this already. One of your website priorities support the creation of a come-as-you-are shelter as a way to get our community members experiencing homelessness into permanent housing. Could you expand on that plan a little bit?
Yeah, so a come-as-you-are shelter or low-barrier shelter just means that the only guidelines are the only thing that might be barring you from entry is just behavior guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
So we have around 2,000 people in Butte County who don't have homes in various levels of shelter. But in 2019, at the time of the homeless point in time count, there were about 389 people who were unsheltered. And that means that they weren't in any degree of shelter. So we have a huge need for people to just have a place to be. And while, you know, we are missing a lot of services, these folks have no ability to connect with service providers. So because the city of Chico declared a shelter crisis in 2018, we're able to do, you know, work maybe a little bit quicker towards these solutions than we might have been. Without a shelter emergency being declared. So I think that we need to look to other cities who have successful low-barrier shelters and use those models and work with our nonprofits, because the problem is too big to just push off to the nonprofits or just push off to the county.
Right.
But, you know, creating those partnerships is going to be vital.
The proposed Orange Street shelter sounds a lot like that, yet it was beaten down by NIMBYism. The university president was opposed to it. Do you see possibilities for existing structures that might be converted into this kind of shelter? We know that the city is thinking about using the BMX space for more shelter, but is there stuff around town that we might utilize at the moment?
Looking at the different sites that were proposed in the homeless opportunities plan from the city, there is the Carmichael building, which was the old unemployment building, mm-hmm. which could be great. It's, you know, it's not perfect, but it's a building. And also looking at, you know, different big box stores that have gone out of business could also be really useful, because we have, you know, stores come and go, and we often have stores that are completely empty until, you mm-hmm. know, September, when they become Halloween stores.
Right. Yes, right. I noticed that.
Pick out the homeless for Halloween.
Be, a great option as well.
Right. You also are in favor of a safe, clean campground with accessible services. How would that work? Where would you put it?
I think that there might, you know, because we are still in the COVID-19 pandemic, I don't know if one centralized site is going to be the way to go. But mm-hmm. looking at, you know, just different big parking lots that we have, you know, again, those abandoned store parking lots or city-owned lots where, you know, there wouldn't be have to be a lease negotiation, where we can have, you know, folks stay safe. They know that they're not going to get moved along the next morning, and just have a little bit of stability, as well as, you know, a bathroom and hopefully some kind of running water. So all of those things will work together also to help folks get, you know, not have to stay in the park and not have to, you know, camp along the waterways. So I think that having separate ones with different capacities is going to be the way to go, especially to make sure that we're allowing for the opportunity to socially distance and keep people safe from the pandemic. So again, you know, looking to our nonprofit in town, not to push the burden onto them, but, you know, to find out what their capacity is and what their ideas are, is going to be a good place to start.
The city has just announced within the past week a plan to deal with homelessness. They're recommending spending $2 million on that. I was intrigued to notice that they did not include a campground in their proposals. A lot of it seemed like prep work to me. All I know is what I read in the paper, and that was a week ago. Wonder if you've had an opportunity to look into that.
Yeah, I've been reading through the plan itself, and there are some solutions in there that I am super excited about, but like I said a little bit earlier, I think we need to look at every solution as, you know, what can we do tomorrow to help solve this problem, and what can we do in the long run to help? And you know, we are facing even larger issues due to having everything be COVID-19 aware and safe. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, one of the main parts of the plan is to appropriate $600,000 from the general fund to facilitate the completion of the new airport BMX location. That preserves the existing location for future use, but that takes a lot of time.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not
it's
saying
long
we should
term.
Never do that. It's just one of those things where it's not necessarily an emergency response, and that's
right,
what we need.
Right. I have to editorialize. I think the whole BMX stuff is not the direction the city should be going. There are other things than running tracks for people to ride hot motorcycles. I mean, we've got much bigger problems. So I was disappointed to see that $600,000 included for the BMX and then restructuring it, just taking over the track out near the fairgrounds. So that's my two bits.
And I would tend to agree with you. I think that we are having a hard time mobilizing an emergency response. You know, we can call it an emergency, but if we don't mobilize an emergency response, then we're just kind of paying lip service to the issue. But looking at it from the view of folks who are living outside every day, you know, every day is an emergency. So then we're not addressing short-term solutions. And to be fair, there are some short-term solutions in there, for sure. There, the proposal of a navigation center that has some beds from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m., as well as, you know, expanding tourist shelter capacity for post-COVID. So, you know, it's a multi-pronged approach, but I think that we do still desperately need a more immediate emergency response.
So it's not enough. What you're saying is what is proposed right now is not really adequate to the need for immediate housing for people.
I have to say, too, I'm impressed by the way you keep coming back to integrated solutions. And in every answer you've given us this evening, you talk beyond the single issue. So,
but go ahead and answer my question.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear the question, Mark.
And yeah, what... It's not enough. So what would you advocate? What would you, if you were in the council, you know, next week, what would you advocate? What would you say? Okay, we've really got to be pushing on this.
I think the two things that we need, well, I think the three things we need to do that are, you know, two of them are much cheaper than the other, but focusing on, you know, legal camping, like safe legal camping and parking. Those could kind of be combined, and that is along, that is in the city's plan, but it hasn't gone forward yet. But that, I believe, should be our top priority, and, you know, holding off a little bit on other ideas until we can get a safe parking site and a safe camping site, because that also will help so much our Paradise neighbors who were burned out and are still living in RVs.
Yes.
I have a friend, and she and I talk a lot, and she's still having a hard time finding a place to park her RV, and that's a huge issue that we could be solving. Mm-hmm. And then making sure that we are working towards a low barrier shelter. Mm-hmm. Because I like the idea of a navigation center, but, you know, it kind of plays into the idea that people aren't, they're just not seeking out services, instead of realizing that while we have amazing service providers and they're doing their best, we don't have enough services to meet the needs of the people that we need to serve.
Let's, in our time remaining, we want to get to your fourth area, and again, I know you're going to give us an integrated response, but you've talked about public safety as a priority, and we know there's a lot of vitriol, in fact, people running against running for city council are some of them strongly under the perception that Chico's no longer a safe city. Public spaces are strewn with trash and needles, that despite police statistics, people perceive that crime is on the upswing rather than the downswing. So what are some of your priorities for public safety?
So some of the things that I want to do are taking a proactive approach to public safety. So often we think of public safety just as how we can respond to emergencies rather than how do we help have fewer emergencies. So I want to work to fund the creation of systems to respond to crises appropriately instead of constantly, you know, asking the police and the fire department to do things that are outside their purview, because they're not social service providers. They're not, that's simply not what they're trained to do or funded to do. So when we invest our money into partnerships with mental health providers, whether that's county or nonprofit, and then other local institutions for community wellness, we're taking that more proactive approach to public safety and to ease that burden on our police force. While I do want to do that, I also want to make sure that our police force is equipped with the best training for the job that we ask them to do. So better de-escalation training, such as the 40-hour Memphis model de-escalation training, would be great. And again, giving them the best possible tools to do the job that they need. And something that's particularly an issue in my district, District 5, is we have a lot of spaces that are just super dark and have almost no streetlights. So, you know, finding out where those spaces are and working to, you know, install some streetlights. I think that some Chico State students actually did a study and presentation. So revisiting that and making sure that we're meeting the needs of our students, as well as, you know, installing super simple things, you know, crosswalks where people fly by but are kind of the natural places to cross the street, is going to be super helpful in maintaining public safety. And also, you know, because it is all integrated. All of our climate resilience solutions and our housing solutions are going to work and move us towards public safety, because no decision or policy that we make is made in a vacuum.
Tell us about the police department. What kind of training would you like? You've mentioned in correspondence, I guess it's on your website, the Memphis model de-escalation training. And perhaps we could ask you to speak on that, the controversial topic of poorly named defunding the police. So a little bit of both. What kind of training do we need? And how would you like to see funds allocated to bring about the kind of public safety changes you see as important?
So the de-escalation training is something that mental health service providers get a lot of. When I was working as a behavioral health education specialist associate, I did get some of that training. And it's some super basic things that you might not think of in the moment. You know, if someone is having a mental health episode, and they're, you know, kind of yelling and waving their arms, it can sometimes be a little scary. So having the training that tells you what body language to use and kind of the words to use that will help calm someone down rather than escalate the situation is going to be, you know, I think that that can be a game changer, where we're taking an approach that works to kind of solve the problem then and there rather than escalate the situation to become even bigger. And I think that something that we can do is reallocating funding towards different programs that, again, work to meet the needs of our community members. Because, you know, I know that a lot of the calls that the police get tend to be to folks with mental illnesses, particularly unhoused folks as well. So having a real crisis response team would be a game changer, and it'd be amazing. You know, the county does a great job, but they need more support, and these better crisis responses are going to take a huge burden off of our police officers and fire departments, mm-hmm. and work to make all of our community members feel safer. There is, up in Oregon, in Lane County, there's the White Bird Clinic, which is their primary 24/7 free crisis intervention service. So they do immediate short-term response to mental health calls, and their counselors empathize with clients and work to de-escalate the situation. And then they have extensive knowledge of local resources that are appropriate to provide ongoing care. So I'd really love to use that model to create a real crisis response team that can meet people where they're at and work to take some of that burden that we put on to the police department.
Do we have all of the resources that we need to make the kinds of changes that you're talking about, like in social services and community health and that sort of thing? And, you know, what sort of funding can we get? I know that, you know, in things like housing, because I paid more attention to that, there are lots of grants that are available for, you know, updating infrastructure and that sort of thing. And I wonder, do we have available what we need, and if not, how do we get it?
So one of the things, I like that you mentioned the grants, and sometimes, you know, I've fallen into this, like, there's all these grants, why don't we just get one and go? But, you know, grant writing is an incredibly intensive process, and the staff time that it takes is often actually the barrier. So I think what we'll need to do is look at the situation that we're in and look at where we could divert staff time into applying for those grants and finding out where that money can come from. That is, you know, in the long run, going to save us money. Sometimes I think it can be hard to get out of, you know, I keep saying we need an emergency response, but sometimes it's hard to get out of the emergency response and look to the future and see what we can do to get more funding to solve the long-term problem. So that's something that I want to prioritize, is looking into, you know, bringing that money into our community and into our economy.
As we close, Lauren, are there other topics that we've failed to cover in this time, or other closing comments that you make?
Or do you want to go, if we didn't ask you something, or if you want to go into more depth about something, we have a couple more minutes.
I think, you know, we covered a lot. I think that one of the things that I do want to say is that we do need to realize that we have to make a change in our response to the crises that we're facing, because if our response that we've been doing had been, it was working, we would be seeing that. So I think that it's time to take a step forward and have a response that's, while it's evidence-based, is maybe something new that we haven't tried before. So I'm excited to have the opportunity to talk about all of the new things and different solutions that we could possibly see in Chico, and realize that we need to adjust our response to the emergencies that we're seeing, and we need to get creative and move forward and meet the future with grace and community.
We want to thank you for being with us tonight, Lauren Kohler. She's candidate for Chico City Council from District 5. We really appreciate your taking time to talk with us and about your ideas, which, to my way of thinking, really do correspond to this program's mantra of taking systematic approaches to environmental, social, and technological ecosystems. So thank you again for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico, exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological. Please be sure to visit our website for notes and recordings of recent programs, plus an ever-growing list of resources provided by our guests. The web address is ecotopiakzfr.com, and we are now a podcast. We have a podcast because Steve works on that every
tirelessly. So tune in.
So you can get our podcast via Spotify, Apple, Google, and their other sources. So just look for us and you'll find us. Coming up
at 7 in 4 minutes, it's Radioactive with Ginger Nichols. This has been Ecotopia. Thanks much for listening.
Weave me the sunshine out of the falling rain. Weave me the hope of a new tomorrow and fill my cup again. Sing it with me. Concrete crumble, shine on me again. The proud and the mighty all have stumbled, shine on me again now. Weave me the sunshine out of the falling. Weave me the hope of a new tomorrow and fill my cup again, fill it again now. Out of the falling, out of the falling, we.